Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with a technologically challenged Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus. It's Al Gore's fault, let's be honest. Jim is on phone rather than our usual crystal clear connection today, but the important thing is that we're together and that we have good news, really bad news, and crazy news to talk about today from the world of politics. And all of it, of course, happens just really less than 24 hours now from the first votes in the New Hampshire primary. Dixville Notch doing its unique thing at midnight tonight. I think there's one other place in New Hampshire that does that, but the campaign is in full form. There were two presidential debates in about a 12-hour span over the weekend. There was one on ABC on Saturday night, and then Meet the Press had another one Sunday morning. I don't know that a lot was changed, but the intensity is definitely ratcheted up. And at a rally for Mitt Romney over the weekend, which he also featured New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, there were some hecklers. And Chris Christie didn't just decide to tell the hecklers to put a cork in it. He decided to turn it on the president as well, which, of course, we love.
I have a message for you, Mr. President. This is the type of disoriented anger. Your cynicism and your division is causing in our country. Bring our country together. Stop dividing it, Mr. President.
Okay, 2 points here real quick that I think are good. One specifically good for Romney, one good for America, Jim, is number one. I think it's probably pretty smart for Romney to use Chris Christie a little more in New Hampshire than he did in Iowa. And secondly, this is good. Between Obama's huge debts, Obama's huge government push, Obama basically dismantling our military in a lot of ways, the divisiveness and the reason for the corrosive tone in America, or at least the worsening of it, it's good to keep out there front and center.
It is, and there's a couple of things here. The first is that of all the primary states, you figure New Hampshire is the one where the Jersey style is going to play best. Clearly, Iowans have a particular different style and quirk to them, and South Carolinians have rough edges. There have certainly been some tough fights in South Carolina politics, so maybe Chris Christie would work out pretty well there. As we all know, there's quite a few Yankee transplants, particularly in the southern part of the state, Hilton Head Island, et cetera. But also, I just think that the observation that there are a lot of ways that Barack Obama has been disappointing. Next to the utterly lousy economy we've had for the last couple of years, and really 8.5% unemployment is not something we should be breaking out the party hats about. When Obama's debut on the national stage was him saying, there are no red states and blue states, only red, white, and blue states. And boy, doesn't that feel good. And aren't we all tired of having people yell at us, telling us, Greg, you and I are tired of partisanship, but when we say that, we mean we're tired of being called knuckle-dragging Neanderthals and racists and greedy and selfish and all these other things that, you know, the left usually calls the right. You tell people on the left, they probably are tired of division in the sense that they've probably been accused of being putting partisanship above the national interest and not being supportive of our troops and various other stuff. So the ideal that Obama pointed to back then, not only from the ideal that he pointed to at the memorial service out in Tucson, Arizona, that's a very nice ideal, but he's done very little or nothing to enact that. And to the point where, look, I mean, when the Occupy Wall Street protests came along, Obama could have come along and said, look, you know, you're not going to get anywhere by blaming other people for where you are in life. You know, the only way you can make your life better is by improving yourself. But that would be, you know, individual responsibility. That would be self-improvement. That would be self-help. That would not be wait around for the government to help you, which is what the entire liberal philosophy is about. So Barack Obama enjoys blaming other people. You know, scapegoating and division is kind of, you know, been part of the part and parcel of the Democrat message for years now. So it's good that Christie is calling him out on this. It'd be really kind of interesting, and I think that with the Republican debate now focusing a great deal on Romney's years at Bain Capital, that if Romney is the nominee, you're going to hear a lot about, well, is it ipso facto immoral for a company to fire people, to lay people off? I think the Obama message is going to be yes, and I think the Republican message is going to have to be no. You cannot effectively ban, you know, if you ban layoffs, you end up with Europe, in which nobody ever seems to get hired. So it's a complicated economic debate to have. It's not necessarily something that's all hearts and flowers, but I think it's something that the Republican Party needs to do. The slogan for the Harrison Ford movie, Clear and Present Danger, was truth needs a soldier. Well, the free market needs a soldier right now. The free market needs somebody to come out and say, look, despite all of its flaws and the problem, you know, with the pain associated with creative destruction and the fact that this system allows you to fail as much as it allows you to succeed, look, somebody's got to go out and defend this, because right now the other side of kumbaya economics is is going strong out there. And you saw the Occupy Wall Street protests. There are a lot of young people who buy into this because they don't know much else.
That's true. And I think if this keeps going, you'll probably see a pretty nice slot at the convention for Chris Christie if Mitt Romney's the nominee. And just real quick in passing, another good martini. You mentioned Tucson, and to see Gabby Giffords there at the one-year anniversary, I think a lot of people would have been extremely excited to know that a year ago that she would have made that kind of recovery. And obviously the recovery still goes on. But considering how horrified we were a year ago to see that is a great sign of progress. On to martini number two now. And unfortunately, once again, we're talking about the passing of someone who's not only well-respected, but very well thought of as a person as well. And that's columnist Tony Blankley. He's held a number of different positions in the public sector. He was press secretary for Newt Gingrich when Gingrich was speaker. He served in the Reagan administration. And before that, he was in California state politics. Anyone who watched the McLaughlin Group knows he was a fixture there with his couldn't really tell if it was a British or kind of refined East Coast accent. It was probably a little bit of both, but rock-solid conservative and just someone who always made a strong and intelligent argument and someone who's just really well thought of, Jim. I know you had a chance to deal with him a couple different times. My favorite Tony Blankley memory, in addition to having the honor of interviewing him a couple times, was just one day I went to see a movie and he was there with his kids and you could tell he was loving every single minute of it. And for a guy who is very polished and on TV all the time, it was good to see that he definitely had his priorities in order.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. I wrote for him a bit when he was editing the Washington Times editorial page, hosted, it was scary to say, just 2 months ago on the National Review cruise, he was there. People who knew Tony Blankley know that he used to be a big, heavy guy who then, you know, openly during one of his, you know, the prediction section, the people who listen to our year-end awards will know he had a New Year's resolution to lose some weight, and he ended up losing a lot of weight. And there was some talk of him having some health issues at that point. When I saw him at the cruise, I said to him, you know, I want to do a joke about how people don't recognize you anymore. And he says, well, I beat cancer. Little did I know, and I think, you know, until we heard the awful news Sunday that I guess he hadn't beaten cancer. I guess he, for whatever reason, did not want to get into it, and I by no means judge him for downplaying the fight that he was undergoing. I feel bad that he didn't feel like he could share that, because I think most folks would have just said he just looked like a skinny version of himself, that he was, you know, as usual, bright, cheery, and I would say, you know, a very warm self. You think about it, in the McLaughlin Group, known for Pat Buchanan and Eleanor Clift shrieking at each other. Tony Blankley always came across as the guy who you'd be most enjoyable just hanging around with. He was a soft-spoken, warm, friendly personality, even when, you know, he was a bit very principled and had no problem standing up for what he believed in. And I think just the kind of personality you'd like to see more of in Washington, and the fact that he'd been doing it for so long and not gotten embittered or frustrated or dampened that sunny personality was all the more marvelous. So Tony Blankley will be very, very missed in this. And it's one of those things, there are certain folks who you find yourself saying, I wonder what they would say right now. I have a feeling as this campaign season progresses, we'll find ourselves saying, what would Tony Blankley be saying about this right now?
Yeah, very well said, Jim. And at the all too young age of 63 as well, but certainly packed a lot into that life, to say the least. So our condolences out to his family and his colleagues at those many different spots along the way in a distinguished career. Back to the campaign trail for our third martini today, Jim, and this goes back to Saturday night's debate on ABC, and the question on the table was, basically, what do you make of the fact that our troops are out of Iraq now, and there's some unrest going on there, which I think a lot of people expected. So what do you do about it? Here's Texas Governor Rick Perry, which I think surprised a few people.
I would send troops back into Iraq, because I will tell you, I think we start talking with the Iraqi individuals there. The idea that we allow the Iranians to come back into Iraq and take over that country with all of the treasure, both in blood and money, that we have spent in Iraq, because this president wants to kowtow to his liberal leftist base and move out those men and women. He could have renegotiated that time frame. I think it is a huge error for us.
And so a couple points there real quick, Jim. First of all, a horrible performance by George Stephanopoulos all the way around. He was about as partisan as a moderator can get. I think a lot of people agree with Rick Perry's assessment that the Obama administration did not try hard at all to keep any sort of sustaining force in Iraq, and that ultimately will be bad for Iraqi security. But I think a lot of people are really stunned to think that there's any political stomach in this country or even in his own party for sending troops back in.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm kind of divided on this, because I policy-wise, I think his assessment of the threat of Iran becoming a de facto power, and or at least having a great deal of sphere of influence in Iraq is accurate. I don't think you can send troops back into the country without the sending troops in without the Iraqi government signing off on it seems challenging, to say the least. You'd basically end up with the re-invasion of Iraq, and boy, if you're already having problems being the Texas governor in the race, being the Texas governor who wants to invade Iraq seems like a really challenging. It's just going to stir up certain memories in the electorate at large. So obviously, it's a politically probably the single most politically unpopular stance you could make, while at the same time assessing a very real threat that I think most people on both sides of the aisle don't want to think very much about. There's kind of this attitude of, all right, we have washed our hands of Iraq. It's up to them, and if they end up becoming a Iranian pawn, that's how it's going to be. Or if it ends up falling apart into civil war, it's not our problem anymore. Well, problems overseas do tend to end up coming up and haunting us in various ways. But I think Rick Perry may have given all of his critics one very easy line of challenge in weeks to come. But, obviously New Hampshire is not going to be his primary battleground. He's going to put all of his, chips on South Carolina. He's beginning 10 days of campaigning right after that debate. So we'll see what happens. But I think that will be a very, very tough stance to sell to the electorate at large, regardless of its merits.
Yeah, that's true. And you're right about New Hampshire. There was one poll that had him tied with Fred Karger, and everyone knows about the Fred Karger campaign in New Hampshire at 0.4%. So, South Carolina is definitely where he's planning to make his stand. But it was interesting Saturday night. There was nobody who wanted to go anywhere near where Rick Perry was going that issue. Jim, hopefully we'll have you back into the 21st century tomorrow online, and we'll talk to you then.
If not, tomorrow's reports come by telegraph.
That's right. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.